Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat to interesting women who can inspire us in our own lives. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Jasmine Dottiwala. Hello and welcome, Jasmine.
Oh, hello, Nikki. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you. And you're there in your glorious offices there behind you, but no one will see that. But it looks fabulous. All glass lifts and everything. Great to speak to you again. Now, Jasmine is head of youth media training and engagement at Media Trust and hosts regular on-screen arts and culture reports for Channel 4, BBC Radio London, Sky News and London Live. She also writes for The Metro and Huffington Post and has presented, appeared on music, youth, TV and entertainment shows on MTV, the BBC, Choice FM, The Jeremy Vine Show and even The Big Breakfast. Wow, gosh, you're one important lady, Jasmine. So when
I've just been around for a long time. It sounds like a lot, but it's really not that impressive.
Oh, it's very impressive. Now, when we first met, we were both working, weren't we, at a live music event a few years ago, because you're a pop music culture pundit as well as everything else and wrote about it. So it's great to see you again. So now you champion new talent and shine a spotlight on diversity and marginalised talent across London. What does that mean to you day to day?
Day to day, what that means is that I've come across a lot of talent in my time, whether it's small grassroots talent or major mainstream talent. And some people just don't get to have those doors opened for them for the mainstream. There have been gatekeepers and old school keepers that have just kept talent from getting into the mainstream. So I've always found it quite frustrating looking at all this talent in my city thinking, wow, why isn't this up there? Why am I watching the wrong people get signed to record deals, signed to movie deals, writers getting publishing deals when I know so many other young, talented, new people? So really, that's all it means. It means that we're shining a light on undiscovered communities and talent that are out there doing their thing and deserve to be heard.
Wow, I don't think that's all it means at all. I think that's incredible you're doing. I love that old school gatekeepers that you say there. And what are we talking about for young? What sort of ages are we talking about?
Young meaning sort of 17 to 35 upwards. I think often the arts and culture industry that I've grown up with has been older people. It's often been, you know, 40 plus that rule the roost, whether it becomes TV or film or literature or art. And I think it's just about acknowledging that there are lots of young people from working class backgrounds who are really ridiculously talented in so many areas that just never get a break. And it's about shining a light on those people.
Fantastic. Where do you find them then?
I've been in the industry for over 2 decades, which means that I've got PR people who have got my email. It's the same email that I've had for over 20 years. It's the same phone number I've had. I'm a true Londoner. I go out and about. I'm everywhere. So being hit up with PR emails, plus all the people that I see out on the streets, at the theatres, at London's nightclubs, local radio stations. I mean, there is incredible talent everywhere. And of course, social media and Twitter really help. So Twitter has made it possible for me not to have to go through a chain of 6 different people to try and get talent into the radio show or the TV spots that I do. I can tweet or I can follow people who in turn follow interesting people, because the thinking now is even your Twitter audience has an audience. So if you are following other people on Twitter who are really interesting, they will lead you down different rabbit holes and you just come across some incredible talents.
Well, fantastic. Love what you're doing. Brilliant. So that must keep you really motivated. What makes you passionate about diversity then?
I'm passionate about diversity because I live in a city that proves that everyone looks and sounds different. We come from all over the world. We come from different backgrounds and classes and cultures. And actually, you don't see that represented on mainstream media, on television, on radio. And so it's important for me to have our media representing exactly what my city feels like. And my city feels vibrant and rich, and it feels cultural and it feels celebratory. And so when I don't see that reflected in mainstream TV and radio, it makes me think, hold on a minute, there's a gap here, we've got to fill it.
You're so right. I love what you do. Now, you first spoke at the House of Lords around inclusivity and diversity in 2017, and they called for advice on streaming as well, didn't they? How did that come about then?
The House of Lords had called me in to talk about the mainstream media in an era of SVODs. And SVODs is basically streaming on video. And what they were interested to know was, why are young people leaving mainstream TV companies in droves and hitting places like Netflix, Amazon, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus? And it was really to talk about whether mainstream media still has a place in our culture. And of course, whilst I think mainstream media does, I think it's just got to up its game. You know, mainstream media brings together the nation when it comes to huge national events, whether it be royal weddings or international sports events or the Olympics. It's a big deal. We need a mainstream national broadcaster for those events. But unfortunately, if you look at a mainstream broadcaster like the BBC, on a typical day, the BBC's actual scheduling on their electronic program guide will show you that there's hardly any relatable content for young audiences. And if you think about the fact that their audiences are now older, in a decade or two, they could die out, which leaves the BBC with no actual content. So the House of Lords had called me in to basically talk about what mainstream platforms could do to engage young people more.
Wow, brilliant. You're doing great stuff for the youth there. So you also chair and sit on judging panels around TV, youth and diversity. You're patron of the British Arts Awards for TV, MOBO Awards Judging Committee, Ivy Club, MTV Diversity Board, BBC Radio 4's Music Women in Power, and you were nominated yourself for Presenter of the Year 2017 at the annual Diversity and Media Awards. Well done, you. Gosh, what? How do you keep on top of all these things?
Well, when you care about diversity passionately, like I do, it's not difficult. I've been doing diversity for 20 years. There are some people who have jobs that say things like diversity and inclusion. Mine doesn't say that. It's just because I've been doing this naturally, whether I've been a TV presenter for music stations like MTV or youth culture shows on Channel 4. Diversity is just something that lives with you. It shouldn't be something that's in your job title.
Very true. Very true. So you've got a very interesting background yourself, haven't you? Your father's Kenyan and your mother's Indian, is that right?
Yeah, my dad's from Mombasa in Kenya and my mum's from Pune in India. And we have relatives scattered all over the world, from New Zealand, Australia, Mauritius, the Americas, you name it. It's a very mongrel type family I come from.
Oh, it's fabulous and very exotic and you look very stunning with it. And did you grow up here then?
I did. I'm a born and bred Londoner, born in the arches of Wembley Stadium, as my dad would say.
Oh, wow.
He always used to say that because there was a football match next door and people were cheering and shouting. When I popped out of my mum's womb, I was used to the applause. Hence,
you've been seeking it all your life. Fantastic. Good for you. And there's also an incredible faith, the Persian Zoroastrian faith. Is that right that you follow it? Have I pronounced that right? Can you just explain a bit about the principles of that?
So Zoroastrianism, which is my mum and dad's religion and mine, is one of the oldest monolithic religions in the world. It predates Christianity and Islam. And you could, if you look it up, it's fascinating. It's basically a religion that believes in good thoughts, good words and good deeds. They believe in the elements, the four elements, fire, earth, water and air. And I mean, I like it as a religion. I mean, I know I'm born into it and I would say that, but it's a beautiful white church. It looks like a Greek temple. There are always fires and candles burning in the church. It's very peaceful. And they basically just believe, as I said earlier, in good thoughts, good words and good deeds. And it's the original religion from the Persian culture. So it's before Iran became Iran. It used to be Persia, and there was a Persian dynasty. And the Persian dynasty at one time ruled the whole globe, and it had some incredible first inventions. And then the Muslims came to Persia and basically ran us out of there. So now the Zoroastrians that you see around the world are all refugees, and that's why we don't have a country of our own, so to speak.
Wow, but you describe the setting and everything. It's beautiful, quite beautifully. So let's talk about your TV career. You studied a degree in media and communications and theatre and dance. Did you always want to work in media?
Do you know what? I didn't always want to work in media. As a child, I did ballet, tap and modern like so many of the kids around my way. I also, you know, it was the beginning of hip hop culture and we were break dancing out in the street in the shopping centres. So I had a bit of classical ballet and a bit of hip hop in my life. And you kind of grow up with those two worlds around you. And I just did my O-levels, or they're now called GCSEs. I was the last year to do O-levels. And then we did A-levels. My teacher said, do you know, you can do a degree in this. So I ended up doing a degree in dance, theatre and media. And it just sort of catapulted from there. I never really knew what I wanted to do. I think originally I wanted to be a ballet dancer, but then I started doing dance classes at Pineapple and someone took me to the side one day and said, look, you're really good and you're really talented, but girls with brown skin don't make the ballet corps because it's just not going to be a thing. So, I mean, it was the best advice I probably could have got because girls back then weren't a part of ballet corps. So I then turned my attention more to media and television than dance.
Wow, gosh, incredible. Really incredible. So you began on Channel 4's Big Breakfast. I loved that show. You were a runner and promoted to the floor assistant, and then made the move into presenting yourself, your debut with the 1990s youth cult show The Word, interviewing Goldie, Mark Morrison, Jean-Claude Van Damme. And have worked with the BBC youth department. I mean, you're very cool with your youth and hip hop. Can you rap?
I can't rap, no. I'm a lover of hip hop culture, but I can't sing to rap.
My teens were going to really be impressed there if you could rap. I need someone to teach me. So, wow, what an incredible TV career. And on MTV, you've hosted, produced and directed MTV shows with Madonna, the Spice Girls, Radiohead, U2. You've worked with Richard Branson and his home, Craig David, Mariah Carey, Destiny's Child. I mean, what was that like? Amazing.
Do you know, I do pinch myself sometimes when I look at my old photos from the MTV days, because I did end up being in this crazy bubble full of these superstar celebrities that you could just never imagine when you were younger. I grew up in Harlesden and Southall. Girls like me were not supposed to end up on private jets or at private islands with Richard Branson. And, you know, I always just say it's about working hard. If you work hard and you put yourself out there, sometimes those opportunities come to you. And the thing that I realised with most celebrities, in fact, not most, all of them, is that no one has a perfect life. And it's a great learning curve. You know, we look at celebrity lifestyle and culture and we think, oh, if only I had their money or their issue, you know, their lives. But actually, they have the same issues as all of us. No one's life is perfect. Dysfunctional families, depression, worrying about money, everyone has it. And that's...
You're so right. You've got a very good view of the world helping those youths there. So... producing and directing huge shows like Cribs, that must have been an amazing experience.
Yeah, MTV Cribs was a big deal back then. It was just starting. People were fascinated with each other's homes. I mean, let's face it, we're all fascinated and we're all nosy about everyone's business, aren't we? Whether it's their cars for Pimp My Ride or their homes for MTV Cribs. MTV Cribs was just a way of getting into celebrities' homes and letting them show off about what they had, or in some cases didn't have, because half those shows often were faked.
Oh, were they? Oh no, yeah. Don't tell us that.
Not always, but often they were faked.
It's through the keyhole with bells on, isn't it? So you've reported on many arts and culture features for Channel 4 News. Is this something you train the youths to do then, as head of youth engagement and media at Media Trust? It's training the youth market to do their own news platforms, is that right?
Yeah, so when I started in television, there'd be a whole camera crew working with me. There'd be six or seven of us going out onto a shoot. There'd be a presenter, a producer, a talent person, a cameraman, a sound man. You could easily have a whole carload of people just to go out to a shoot. But the one thing that I realised being at MTV after many years was I could shoot my own stuff. I could present my own stuff. I could basically edit back then. And it made you realise that the reason every time there was a redundancy, I wasn't being let go is because I was a multitasker and could fulfill lots of different job roles. So then I thought, well, if we're going to talk about diversity, because when I was at MTV heading up a couple of the channels, we kept getting charities asking us for work experience for their young people. And I used to like roll my eyes and go, oh, I could do that much better than you. And then someone once said to me, well, if you think you can, then why don't you? And it kind of planted a seed across the years. And I thought, this is what I would do with young people. I would say, how are you going to be better than your Oxford, Cambridge counterparts? The only way you're going to be better is if you can tick loads of boxes and you can be be a better business option for employers to hire. And hence at the Media Trust now, we do lots of training with young people where we do programs that teach them how to film, basic editing skills, how to have their voice heard, public speaking, confidence. And we've extended those programs now so that they're powered by some of our corporate partners. So we have advertising and PR giants like Edelman and BBH coming in. We have, you know, the TV giants like Sky, ITN, Channel 4, ITV. So young people are really getting a great overview of what it's like to work in TV and media companies. And it means that often they're more skilled up than the adults that work in those brands and platforms, which means now, instead of going out and having six or seven people in a crew, you can send one or maximum two young people out and they can get your job done for you quickly, easily, and they're really digitally minded. So it's a win-win for everyone.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. Gosh, aren't they lucky? I'm going to send my teens along to see you. So you exec produce and manage the 360 series of news shows, London 360, UK 360, Arts 360. Have you got 120 young reporters working into you? Is that right?
Yeah, they're all over the country. So they're Birmingham, Manchester and London where we train young people. And a lot of that programme is now titled. So London 360, we've scattered out and we've got programs called Creativity Works, Vlog Star Challenge, Transforming Hidden Talent. It's just some people can't commit to a whole 6 months and some funders don't want to fund 6 months of a young person's time. So now a lot of those that program is a lot shorter and a lot more impactful.
Wow, it sounds amazing. So you are actively helping news. And last year you worked with the House of Commons MPs for the Youth Violence Commission. I mean, what do you think can be done to tackle the crime and problems on the street nowadays?
Well, I think the thing that people have misjudged is youth violence doesn't occur because young people are just bad. You know, no one's born bad. Someone young who I was training a couple of years said to me, living in socially deprived working class areas like council estates is like growing up in hell. And so if you are growing up in hell, you're going to become Satan just to survive. And that really planted a seed in my head. You know, these young people don't go out and do what they do just because they're bad. Sometimes it's desperate times calling for desperate measures. And so when you think of austerity and poverty, if a young person doesn't have any options for a full-time job, they're seeing their local drug dealer roll around in a flash car wearing lots of jewellery with a cute girlfriend on their arm. If that's their aspirational role model, then that's what they're going to look to do instead of trying to get a job, trying to live life in a legally correct way. And then if we're not giving them any opportunities for jobs or training, and then we're not giving them any opportunities to get on the housing ladder, I mean, it's all of your chickens come home to roost. It's like one perfect storm.
Gosh, yes, there's a lot more support that needs to be done for youth, isn't there?
Well, if you think about when we were younger, we all had youth clubs.
Exactly.
I had youth clubs in all the schools that I went to. There was
Definitely.
Girls Brigade, there were Girls Scouts, there were summer camps, there were music camps. Everything was out there and it was free. So I could have easily been one of those kids who was running around on the street, not up to no good, if I didn't have any of those youth clubs at my beck and call.
Yes.
You know, I live next door to a church. My church had Bible studies, Girls Brigade on a Monday. I mean, I was really occupied. I had no option to go off and follow a bad path. You know, young people now don't often have those opportunities because austerity has cut funding everywhere.
Definitely bring back the youth clubs. I used to spend a lot of my time at youth clubs as well. They were something to do instead of hanging around, weren't they? So what would you say to others facing challenges they're battling to overcome and finding it difficult to come back from?
It depends on where your challenges are, I guess. I think ultimately what I do find is I read a book a few years ago. Madonna, in an interview had said to me, because I asked her a similar question, and she said to me, I started reading this Deepak Chopra book. It's called The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success. And she said, ever since I've read it, she said, it's completely changed my mind on a lot that I used to get quite emotionally angry about and quite het up. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And of course, being an MTV presenter, my job was then to go out and get that book and then feedback on what I thought Madonna's book advice was. And actually, I read the book too, and I went, wow, this is amazing. It's a really short book. It's not, you know, long and lengthy, but it just had these seven spiritual laws of success. And one of them said something like, he who angers you conquers you. And I remember thinking, wow, of all the times I've been frustrated and peed off with people, had I read some of this before, I could have like put myself in a much more balanced state of mind. So, you know, I would just say to anyone going through challenges, it's about being balanced. It's about being kind to people. The more goodwill and the more good stuff you put out there, the more will come back to you in karma. It's about knowing that nothing lasts forever and anything bad is only a momentary blip. It's about remembering that in 2 to 3 years' time, you won't even remember the moment you're going through now. And it's about getting a nice network of people around you, good supportive friends and family who can talk you through things. Because ultimately, I think lots of people talk about therapy. And I think my girlfriends and my closest friends are like my therapists. You can have a rant with them whenever you need to. So I guess those are the things I would say to anyone going through a challenge.
Wow, that's fantastic. You need to write a book yourself. You're a guru. And little insights from Deepak and Madonna thrown in. I love how you say, oh, I was talking to someone. Oh, actually, it was Madonna. So, I know, exactly. You have calmed Madonna. So who have you met that was influential to you then, Jasmine?
Gosh, everyone I meet influences me. When you've worked in this industry for 20 years, you meet Joe blogs on the street, you meet celebrities, you meet pop stars, you meet politicians, and honestly, all of them teach me something. Everyone has got a fascinating story. Often people who have made it really successful have come from places that are quite painful or big challenges, and I learn something from everyone. Honestly, I really, really do. You know, I used to be quite a mouthy music columnist when I was younger, and I used to write for a magazine called Touch Magazine, and it was a slot called Jasmine's Juice in the magazine. And it used to get hundreds and hundreds of letters from people who would read it. And then I took that slot to a radio station, and it was on Choice FM as well. So I was in print and on the radio. And it was quite a cutting, quite shady Wendy Williams type column. And it was only after meeting music artists like Mariah Carey, Jay-Z and Beyonce that actually I stopped doing that column, because I realized that the music acts that I was taking the mickey out of or shading were actually real life sensitive people, and their money didn't make them any less vulnerable. And they would say things to you like, well, I read that thing that you said about me, or I heard that thing that you said about me, and this is how it made me feel. And you suddenly go, oh, it wasn't just a bit of fun. You know, some people were actually hurt by something you said. So yeah. I think meeting and working with celebrities teaches you that everyone's human, and just to be a bit kinder.
Gosh, that's very wise. And you need to intro me to Beyonce for an influential women podcast. So can we talk about your other passions then? I know you've done that advanced ballet and dance group that you talked about, a massive focus. Are you still dancing?
I still try to get in a dance class where I can every now and again. In fact, I did one last night at my local gym. Yeah, I loved doing ballet and street dance. And my gym now does dance hall classes as well.
Wow, you've got so much energy. What's the secret for your energy then?
Well, I don't have any kids, so the energy that I would be probably giving to children is what I'm giving everywhere else. Everyone always thinks I've got loads and loads of energy. Trust me, when I'm knackered, I am knackered and sleeping.
Gosh, you'd be a great mum as well. You're so wise with youths and what they need. So how do you occupy your time when you're not working then?
What do? My friends and I hang out. My crib is always the crib that everyone comes round to. My living room is the one everyone's always piled into, debating. People bring round random food. We go out for walks along the river. My couple of my friends have got dogs, so it's dogs along the river walk time where we banter and we stop off in Kew Gardens and get like coffees and little Italian pastries. What else do I like doing? Sunday papers takes a lot of my time on Sundays because I'm obsessed with what everyone's saying.
Perfect.
Yeah, that with the gym and dance classes, that's probably about it.
Oh, it sounds perfect. Now, you touched on a mantra earlier. Do you have a main mantra for living your life? I love the Deepak Chopra one, but do you have one?
Do you know what? Things that people have said to me over the course of my career stand out to me, and I kind of acted upon them. So someone once said to me, you are the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. And so it made me form a group around me at work that were very influential. And it wasn't just five people. I put 30 people together in my MTV days who are all leaders in arts and culture, whether they run record labels or they're filmmakers or movie directors, whatever they do, they're really good at what they do. Ooh. So I surrounded myself with people like that, and we all were coming up at the same time, and that has made a difference. So that's one mantra I live by. You are the average of the five people that you spend the most.
That's interesting, isn't it? So choose our friends wisely.
Well, if you think about it, if you've got someone negative and bitchy around you all the time, you'll end up being the same. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
And then another one is you are the average. The other one is what is it? If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
So it's the same with relationships as well, though, isn't it? If they're toxic or negative, you know.
Exactly. Learning. I like learning from people. I love being in a room full of people who are not in the same industry as me. So if I'm in a room with taxi drivers, policemen, firefighters, I'm fascinated. Oh. I've got a million questions for them. How do you do this? How did you train? What do you know? What are your top three tips for tech? Really? You know, I just love hearing from people.
So you're so curious. I am too, actually. And you know, it was a gift meeting you. You saying it, you know, everyone's a gift. Bizarrely, that we sat next to each other for the whole evening, didn't we, chatting away, whatever, and then all these years later suddenly think, I know. And it's really weird how life turns around, isn't it? So what's next for you then? I mean, you know, busy with what you're doing by the sounds of it.
Do you know what, people have always asked me in interviews what's next, and I always say it's hard to think about what's next. I just believe that if you're passionate about what you do, the next opportunity will present itself. It's awkward when people say things like, oh, in 5 years time I want to do this, and then suddenly you're so focused on that goal that you've missed something else that was open, you know, door to you. So I try not to think about what's next. I just try to live my best life, keep it happy and fun and positive, and those opportunities that come, hopefully I'll spot them.
You're so right. That's why you're so down with the kids. I'm so impressed by you. So keep on championing talent and helping youths. They're tomorrow's voices, aren't they? What would you say to men and women? We have men listening to the Influential Women podcast too. You know, we think they want to find out why we're so influential, but is there anything you'd say to them all as a leaving gift?
I think women can only be influential with the support and the movement of other women, but also with the co-signing of men. You know, because we want to be strong, empowering women, and we want to embrace diversity, doesn't mean we want to do it to the exclusion of men. It's like, you know, whenever I champion anything to do with race or culture, just because I'm championing black or brown race or culture, I'm not doing it because I'm excluding white culture. You know, all I'm saying is, hey, am I allowed to be proud of who I am? I'm a brown-skinned female, and this is what other brown-skinned women are doing. You know, so I think it's about being inclusive and open. And I think one of my biggest tips would be just listen to what people say. We don't listen often enough, whether it's in real life or on social media. Sometimes we just reply to people to have a voice. And I think sometimes it's important to listen. If a group of people says they're offended by something or something hurts them, it's really important that we listen and say, actually, I don't belong to that group, but they're telling me that's offensive to them. So I'm going to take that on board and not say it's not, because your experience is your experience.
Anything else you want to add?
Well, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Just keep influencing. I hope there are lots of people out there who are inspired and encouraged, and keep following your dreams. Just be the best at what you do. Don't kid yourself. Ask your friends if you're a great singer. If they all say no, then try and find another career. Sometimes we follow our dreams and they're not actually our dreams to follow. So ask people, am I good at this thing? Most people will say to you, you're good at something or another. People used to say to me when I was younger, God, you're really chatty and you're really nosy. But actually, being really chatty and nosy are the two fundamentals of being a journalist or a reporter. Friends and family what you're great at, and I promise you it'll, you know, give you a direction in your life.
Thank you so much, Jasmine, for your time helping us talk about diversity, supporting our youth and the talent of tomorrow. We really appreciate your time. The Influential Women's Podcast is co-founded and host presented by Nikki Bannerman, with award-winning co-founder and co-producer Juliet Nichols. Please download, rate, and review our podcast, and contact us about becoming a patron or sponsoring our shows by emailing Nikki at nikkibannerman.co.uk.